What's behind the diplomatic thaw with North Korea? And we'll play a round of Brexit bingo. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Vivienne Nunis. Good morning. Markets in Asia have reacted positively to the news that President Donald Trump will meet with North Korean President Kim Jong-un. South Korea says its northern neighbour has committed to denuclearisation, but Mr. Trump says sanctions on North Korea will stay in place until such a deal has been reached. Tom Byrne is president of the Korea Society in the US. He spoke to me from Seoul, and I asked him whether the talks were a diplomatic coup for Donald Trump.
Remember, during the campaign, he said he would resolve this crisis by having a hamburger with Kim Jong-un. So maybe we're getting closer to that. I think a lot of credit goes to President Moon in South Korea. And President Moon can take this gamble. President Trump can also give it a shot. And they can do this because the alliance is very stable. There's a very stable center of gravity to this ROK-USA alliance.
What's North Korea's motivation for agreeing to these talks? How much has it been hurt by international sanctions?
There's two motivations that I see. And one is that I think North Korea was rattled by the U.S. taking a coercive diplomatic approach for the first time against North Korea, both the sanctions and the military. As an economist, the way I see things is sanctions are taking a toll. China, more rather than less, is implementing the sanctions. The U.S. is ratcheting up the sanctions. Trade between China shrank something like 80% in the month of January compared with a year ago.
There are some fears, though, that perhaps North Korea is stringing along the U.S. when it comes to these promises of denuclearization. Is it a case of we'll believe it when we see it?
It is. Those are very valid fears because that's what's happened in the past. So this is an opportunity for a breakthrough. It's a long shot, though.
Tom Byrne, let's do the numbers. The news of a summit between President Trump and North Korea's Kim Jong-un pushed shares in Hong Kong up more than 1%. Markets in Europe are lower as investors await fresh employment and wage inflation figures from the US and the impact of America's new trade tariffs. China has described President Trump's steel and aluminium tariffs as a serious attack on the world's international trade system. The Chinese steel industry, which produces half the world's steel, is demanding reciprocal measures. Guo Yu is China analyst at global risk consultancy Maplecroft.
We believe China doesn't have as much to lose from the tariff as other top steel suppliers such as Brazil and South Korea. The U.S. only bought 1.4% of China's total steel exports last year. And that means, you know, Beijing has a lot of scope to seek out alternative customers to try to offset the potential loss orders from the world's biggest economy.
And yet China's steel industry is demanding retaliation.
It is. So from that perspective, because they are the industry representative, one wouldn't be surprised they wanted to define their interests and want to have a retaliatory measures. We believe the measure will be quite cautious because China has said they will respond to any U.S. protectionist policies, but at the same time, they keep stressing that a scenario of a trade war is no good for either parties and no good for the global economy.
Guo Yu, the European Union is Britain's biggest export market, but with just over a year to go until Brexit, British companies are split over what the new trade relationship with Europe should be. The BBC's Will Bain reports from this year's British Chambers of Commerce conference.
Well, I mean, there's still a strong element of uncertainty.
Well, the measure of the economic fallout will be a factor of how long we have this uncertainty.
And households look through Brexit-related uncertainties initially.
Anybody playing along Brexit bingo at home? Then that's a word you need to have on your card. Uncertainty. It's very much the word of the moment when it comes to Brexit. And that's why here in the shadow of Big Ben and Westminster Abbey in the historic heart of London, business leaders are demanding clarity.
I'm Anastasia Belyakova. I am head of trade policy at the British Chambers of Commerce. We represent 75,000 businesses. It's a no-brainer that all businesses want to have a zero-tariff trading arrangement with the EU. But of course, you have to remember that's only one part of the cost of trading internationally. Will they have to pay import VAT? Will they have to go to several different regulators?
We are almost exactly a year out from Britain leaving the European Union. Can you believe that you're still using phrases like will they, might we?
It is very frustrating for businesses when all you hear is political slogans and very little practical answers.
So to continue the very British theme in the conference lunch break, I got down to two very British pastimes, eating fish and chips and talking Brexit.
David Layton, Group Head of Corporate Affairs at Associated British Ports. Around half of our trade is with the EU. Consequently, we do have expertise in handling trade with countries outside the customs union. There are systems and technology in place to make sure that cargo can flow smoothly, and indeed it does, day in, day out.
My name is Stephen Britt. My business is Anchor Storage Limited. It's very uncertain where we stand at the moment. People now have got tired of the ping pong.
And to be clear for people listening at home as well, you're a person who voted to leave the European Union.
Yes, I did. I was a keen Brexiteer. The majority of my business is from outside the EU, but it's the EU rules that affect me. It's how those rules might change, either positively or negatively.
We shall see if they get those answers soon. In London, I'm the BBC's Will Bain for Marketplace.
And finally, 48 years after the death of the legendary guitarist Jimi Hendrix, a new album of his studio recordings is being released. The songs were recorded between 1968 and his death 2 years later. In London, I'm Vivienne Nunes with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.